And without any delay, we are happy to see Brother Lynn to come up and talk about his talk on Joseph.
Good morning, everyone. First, I'd like to thank a couple of people. First, Brother Jim, for pointing out that I wasn't done with my talk yet. And also for Sister Barbara to point out to me when I said better late than never, she said better never late, which I hadn't heard that one before, so appreciate that lesson as well. Oh, and I had one more person to thank. The brethren and sisters of Hengoyd really helped out a lot in all their planning, and they also gave us linens and everything, so I wanted to thank Sister Liz for giving me this washcloth, I guess is what it's supposed to be. So. But we seriously do appreciate everything that you've all done for us. Today's subject is Joseph, and the main theme is this subtitle here, Yahweh was with him, and that which he did, Yahweh made it to prosper. And the approach I did, I was asked to do this talk and talk about the influences and events and the things surrounding Joseph that helped to form his character. So the way I looked at that is not by going into real tiny details, at least at first. You know, a lot of studies you can do and get a lot of information from looking at word derivations and so forth, but... And since I was on the plane looking at this quite a bit, I decided to look at his character as if I was way up above, 37,000 feet, looking down on his life. So if you think of like David, the first thing that maybe comes to your mind about his character was that he was a man after God's own heart. And then from there, you can kind of say, well, why do I think that? And then you can start to maybe hone in on some details or some things that he did that led you to that belief. So, first I wanted to define, just for my own well-being, to understand what character is, look at some sample characteristics, and then to look at those events and influences. So that's what I'd like to do concerning Joseph this morning. We'll also see that he was a type of a perfect character in our Lord Jesus. And then finally, how we can apply some of these lessons to us. So first of all, just looking up online the definition of character, it says the combination of features or qualities that distinguishes one person, group, or thing from another. And so that's what we'll look at is some of these characteristics. And we all are unique people, and we all each have a unique combination of these features and qualities. So I looked up what some sample characteristics might be, and I found some tables online that they had literally dozens and dozens of characteristics. And here's just an example. I picked out a few. Some are good, some are bad. And they're kind of good in a self-examination sort of way to look and see, do I have these characteristics, or am I lacking in this, or do I have this and I shouldn't? Because you can see some of these are positive and some are negative. And we'll point out some of these characteristics that Joseph had through his life. Now, looking at influences, there are several sources that influence you and what you do and what you think and can help shape your life and your character. And so we'll look at some of those and how they affected Joseph. And of course, a very big influence in Joseph's life and in our lives as well is family. And then there are other people outside the family that have influences on us. And then our environment, what place that we're in or the kind of people that we're around. And then the situations that we get in that environment. Well, these are all influences that can help form our character. And of course, God. How big of an influence was God in Joseph's life? So now we won't look at every single event. We know that Joseph had a very full life, and there's some 14 chapters devoted to Joseph. And I'm just going to pick out some of the events, most of the major ones, and then I've just picked out a few of the verses that kind of show the event. And then we'll look and see the events and the influences and how that formed his character. So the first, we read that Jacob loved Joseph in Genesis 37:3. Now Israel loved Joseph more than all his children because he was the son of his old age, and he made him a coat of many colors. So what were the influences there? Well, his mother Rachel had died. We see that his father's love for him was strong, and that he was his firstborn from Rachel. And we know that he loved Rachel the most, and so it kind of followed that Joseph would be his favorite. We also know that Joseph loved Jacob as well, and so they had a very loving relationship. So what character traits from this did Joseph acquire? Well, it's kind of a common thing that the firstborn of a family tends to be more confident, more self-centered, more courageous. And we'll see that this was no exception in Joseph's case. The next event that we read of is his brethren and his hatred, the hatred they had of him. 37 and 4 of Genesis. And when his brethren saw that their father loved him more than all his brethren, they hated him and could not speak peaceably unto him. They had become jealous of his position with his father. So what were the influences there? Well, his brethren definitely had a huge influence on his life and the things that were about to happen to him. Well, part of his character at this point was that he was scared. He knew that they hated him. But that didn't stop him, as we see in the next event, that he had these dreams and he didn't hesitate to tell them to his brethren. And this is where he used God as his influence. We read, continuing on there in Genesis 37, and Joseph dreamed a dream and he told it his brethren, and they hated him yet the more. And he said unto him, hear, I pray you, this dream which I have dreamed. For behold, we were binding sheaves in the field, and lo, my sheaf arose and also stood upright, and behold, your sheaves stood round about and made obeisance to my sheaf. His brethren said unto him, shalt thou indeed reign over us, or shalt thou indeed have dominion over us? And they hated him yet the more for his dreams and for his words. And he dreamed yet another dream and told it to his brethren. And behold, I have dreamed a dream more. And behold, the sun, moon, and the 11 stars made obeisance to me. And his brethren envied him, but his father observed the saying. So it was God here that influenced him, even though he knew this would not be a popular thing to say to his brethren, but he knew this dream was of God. And so he told that dream to his brethren and to his father, and we'll find out how that dream and those things came to pass. So first we might think, well, was that arrogance or conceit to tell your brothers, well, I'm superior to you, I'm going to reign over you. And you might think that, but I think it was really more of courage and faith in God, because he knew that's what the source of the dream was. It wasn't something that he just thought up of himself. So then we know the next kind of major event in his life was that he was cast into a pit and eventually sold to the Ishmaelites, and then in turn sold to Potiphar. Read, continuing that same chapter, they said one to another, behold, this dreamer cometh. Come now, therefore, let us slay him and cast him into some pit, and we will say some evil beast hath devoured him, and we shall see what will become of his dreams. And then skipping down a little bit, it came to pass when Joseph was come unto his brethren that they stripped Joseph out of his coat of many colors that was on him. And they took him and cast him into a pit, and the pit was empty, and there was no water in it. And they sat down to eat bread. Notice that they really had no guilt for doing what they did. Their hatred was so intense that they would just sit down to eat bread. They lifted up their eyes and looked, and behold, a company of Ishmaelites came from Gilead with their camels, bearing spicery and balm and myrrh, going to carry it down to Egypt. Judas said unto his brethren, "What profit is it if we slay our brother and conceal his blood? Come and let us sell him to the Ishmaelites. Let not our hand be upon him, for he is our brother in our flesh." And his brethren were content. Then were passed by Midianites, merchantmen, and they drew and lifted up Joseph out of the pit and sold Joseph to the Ishmaelites for 20 pieces of silver. And they brought Joseph into Egypt. And then later on we read that the Midianites sold him into Egypt unto Potiphar, an officer of Pharaoh's, a captain of the guard. So the influences we see in this event of his life, and it was one of the most far-reaching events that affected him, and it was because of his brethren's hatred for him. And at the time, he was away from his father. His father had sent him to find out where his brethren were in their sheep herding, and that he kind of got out of that comfort zone around his father. And of course, it turned out to be a very dangerous environment to be in, alone with his brethren. And so we see that the Ishmaelites also, not part of his family, but they certainly were a huge influence in his life, because they're the ones that took him and eventually sold him to Potiphar. And again, and we'll see this a lot with Joseph, that he allowed God to be a major influence in his life. All this was happening to him, yet he still remained faithful, as we'll see later on. We'll see that he didn't let these things get him down. So he kind of went from scared to terrified at this point. It's probably hard for us to imagine what it would be like to be cast into a pit and to hear your brothers talking about killing you, and then being sold as a slave into strangers' hands, and then being taken away, and then being sold again. So it must have been a very humbling time for Joseph after being treated so well by his father and being the favorite son. But we'll see that this is the first kind of sense that we get that he was a very enduring man. That was one of his character traits. So the next thing we see when he's working under Potiphar, that he starts to grow. He doesn't wallow in self-pity for what has happened to him, but he makes the best of the situation that he was put in. We read in chapter 39 now, verse 2, "And the Lord was with Joseph, and he was a prosperous man, and he was in the house of his master, the Egyptian. And his master saw that the Lord was with him, and that the Lord made all that he did to prosper in his hand. Joseph found grace in his sight and served him, and he made him overseer over his house, and all that he had he put into his hand. It came to pass from the time that he had made him overseer in his house and over all that he had, that the Lord blessed the Egyptian's house for Joseph's sake. And the blessing of the Lord was upon all that he had in the house and in the field. And he left all that he had in Joseph's hand, and he knew not aught he had, save the bread which he did eat. And Joseph was a goodly person and well favored." So we see that Joseph still kept his faith in God, and he exhibited that to others. Potiphar saw that, and he found grace in his sight. And so we see that he was a goodly person and well favored in his environment that he was put in. So what are the influences here working in his life? Well, again, it seemed to be God. He didn't wallow in self-pity. He had faith in God that he would be okay. And it would be hard to imagine the uncertainty that you'd be in at this point, not knowing what would happen next to you, being in the hands of strangers and being working under them, not knowing what might happen. So here we see some a place being an influence in his life, of being in Egypt, which was kind of the center of everything that was going on, especially during this time of famine. So the character traits that we see exhibited here is that he was hardworking. He was given a job to do, and he worked hard for his boss, and he was patient. He didn't give up on his situation. He just said to himself, I'm going to do the best I can, and I'm going to patiently wait for something better to happen to me. And all this time, he remained faithful to God and that he would take care of him. And we saw that that's exactly what happened. So the next event in his life was a temptation. And it's what we read about this morning in Genesis 39:7. It came to pass after these things that his master's wife cast her eyes upon Joseph, and she said, "Lie with me." But he refused and said unto his master's wife, "Behold, my master wotteth not what is with me in the house, and he hath committed all that he hath to my hand. There is none greater in this house than I. Neither hath he kept anything from me but thee, because thou art his wife. How then can I do this great wickedness and sin against God?" And it came to pass, as she spake to Joseph day by day, that he hearkened not unto her, to lie by her or to be with her. And it came to pass about this time that Joseph went into the house to do his business, and there was none of the men of the house there within. And she caught him by his garment, saying, "Lie with me." And he left his garment in her hand and fled and got him out. So what do we see the influences now? Well, we see that Potiphar's wife came into the picture, and in tempting him, well, this could have been a great influence, but it still was an influence because it made him stronger, because he was able to withstand this temptation. There was certainly the uncertainty of the future. We can be put in situations a lot of times where we just think, you know, I give up, we throw our hands up, and we just say, I really don't care what happens, I'll do whatever I want. It doesn't really matter at this point. But Joseph never lost sight of the influence of God in his life. So the character traits that we saw that he exhibited in this event was that he was trustworthy. So he had been given a job to do by Potiphar, and he was thankful for that job. And he did not want to betray the trust of Potiphar by doing this. And we also see that he was obedient in doing the right thing in this case. But as we read, and it seemed like things were going well for Joseph at this point, but evidently God felt like his character needed further humbling and further development. And so another trial was put before him. We read in Genesis 39:13. It came to pass when she saw that he had left his garment in her hand and was fled forth, that she called unto the men of the house and spake unto them, saying, "See, he hath brought in an Hebrew unto us to mock us. He came in unto me to lie with me, and I cried with a loud voice." And she spake unto him according to these words, saying, "The Hebrew servant which thou hast brought unto us came in unto me to mock me. And it came to pass, as I lifted up my voice and cried, that he left his garment with me and fled out. And it came to pass, when his master heard these words of his wife, which he spake unto him, saying, "After this manner did thy servant to me," that his wrath was kindled. And Joseph's master took him and put him into prison, a place where the king's prisoners were bound, and he was there in the prison. So he was obviously framed for something that he didn't do. But because it was Potiphar's wife, he believed her and put Joseph in the prison. So once again, in a sense, he's cast into the pit for the second time. But what do we read? But the Lord was with Joseph and showed him mercy and gave him favor in the sight of the keeper of the prison. And the keeper of the prison committed to Joseph's hand all the prisoners that were in the prison. And whatsoever they did there, he was the doer of it. The The keeper of the prison looked not unto anything that was under his hand, because the Lord was with him, and that which he did, the Lord made it to prosper. We read that over and over again throughout the life of Joseph, that the Lord was with him, and that which he did, the Lord made it to prosper. And this is because Joseph never lost sight of God during all of his trials. So once again, another set of influences. Well, of course, here he was framed by Potiphar's wife. Potiphar believed the wife and cast him into prison. And now we have someone else coming into the picture, the keeper of the prison. But it didn't seem to matter to Joseph. No matter where he went, he would continue to have faith in God and to work hard and to strive to follow all the things that he knew were the right things to do. This would be another point when you thought, well, I got through that trial, I'm doing, and things are better now. I've lost my father, my brethren, but at least I'm doing well in this place that I'm at now. But then all that went horribly wrong. But immediately we read that he did well in the prison, and he found favor in the keeper of the prison and ended up serving there as well. So it was a great show of faith and enduring all these hardships. So while he was in prison, we read that a couple of new prisoners came in. The butler and the baker were familiar with this event. In chapter 40, it says, "It came to pass after these things that the butler of the king of Egypt and his baker had offended their lord, the king of Egypt. The captain of the guard charged Joseph with him, and he served them. And they continued a season in ward." Notice that he served them. Even in prison himself, he was still serving others and helping out in the prison, helping the keeper of the prison. "And they dreamed a dream, both of them, each man of his dream in one night. Each man according to the interpretation of his dream, the butler and the baker of the king of Egypt, which were bound in the prison. Joseph came unto them in the morning and looked upon them, and behold, they were sad. And he asked Pharaoh's officers that were with him in the ward of his lord's house, saying, Wherefore look ye so sadly today? And he said unto him, We have dreamed a dream, and there is no interpreter of it. And Joseph said unto them, Do not interpretations belong to God? Tell me them, I pray you. So at this point, we know that these dreams were explained by butler and baker to Joseph, and he told them the interpretation. And then we know the end result there, and just skipping on, that Pharaoh had restored the chief butler to his butlership again, and he gave the cup into Pharaoh's hand, but he hanged the chief baker, as Joseph had interpreted to them. Yet did not the chief butler remember Joseph, but forgot him. So now we have another set of influences, the butler, the baker, and still God. Notice that he gave the credit to God for being able to interpret these dreams. Another character trait that we haven't seen yet was kindness. He noticed that these prisoners were sad and he was concerned about them. It said he was serving them, and he asked them what their sadness was, and he helped them out by interpreting those dreams. Of course, we know it didn't work out as well for the baker, but he still was kind to them. So now we read in Genesis 41 that two more years had passed. So Joseph was hoping that maybe the butler and baker would remember what had happened, especially the butler, since he's the one that was able to carry on and back in Pharaoh's house, that he would speak kindly of Joseph, that he would help him out and get him back into the king's house and into Potiphar, into Pharaoh's favor. But it said that he forgot him. And so here we see that Joseph was in prison for two more years. But at this time, Pharaoh himself had a dream. And behold, he stood by the river. And it talks about his dream. I won't go into a lot of the details here, but we continue to verse 8. It says, "It came to pass in the morning that his spirit was troubled, and he sent and called for the magicians of Egypt and all the wise men thereof. And Pharaoh told them his dream, but there was none that could interpret them unto Pharaoh. Then spake the chief butler unto Pharaoh, saying, I do remember my faults this day. And so he recounts the dream interpretation from Joseph, what had happened to him while he was in prison. And then Pharaoh sent and called Joseph and brought him out, and it's recorded that Joseph shaved himself and changed his raiment and came in unto Pharaoh. So we read in verse 16, Joseph answered Pharaoh, saying, It is not in me. God shall give Pharaoh an answer of peace. And Joseph said unto Pharaoh, The dream of Pharaoh is one. God hath showed Pharaoh what he is about to do. So he tells him the interpretation, what it all meant, about the famine and the plan to deal with the famine. And so we read, The thing was good in the eyes of Pharaoh and in the eyes of all his servants. So it seemed that everywhere Joseph went, he made a good impression on everyone. He got along well with everyone, and yet he gave God the credit in everything that he was able to do. And Pharaoh said unto his servants, Can we find such an one as this is, a man in whom the Spirit of God is? And Pharaoh said unto Joseph, Forasmuch as God hath showed thee all this, there is none so discreet and wise as thou art. Thou shalt be over my house, and according unto thy word shall my people be ruled. Only in the throne will I be greater than thou. And Pharaoh said unto Joseph, See, I have set thee over all the land of Egypt. And Pharaoh took off his ring from his hand and put it upon Joseph's hand, and arrayed him in vestures of fine linen, and put a gold chain about his neck. And he made him ride in the second chariot which he had, and they cried before him, Bow the knee. And he made him ruler over all the land of Egypt. And Pharaoh said unto Joseph, I am Pharaoh, and without thee shall no man lift up his hand or foot in all the land of Egypt. And Joseph was 30 years old when he stood before Pharaoh, king of Egypt. And Joseph went out from the presence of Pharaoh and went throughout all the land of Egypt. So once again he was restored, this time by Pharaoh, and became one of the leaders of the whole land. So what are the influences in this event? Well, the butler did finally remember in the face of this dream. Pharaoh, of course, had a great influence on his life because he removed him from the prison and he went on to greatness in the workings of the land of Egypt and in dealing with this famine. But we know that God was present and in his life, and Joseph allowed God to work in him. And he gave credit all the time to God. Every time he interpreted a dream or anything that he was able to do, he gave credit to God. And it was because of this great famine that a lot of this was to happen. And that's why that he had that dream in the first place, because it was regarding the famine. And we would see next what he would do in his life to deal with that famine. So the character traits we see here is that he was respectful. We can look at even tiny details that when he was called to Pharaoh that he shaved, and that was a custom at the time to do that if you were going to appear before the king. He showed great endurance. We read it was 2 years after he had interpreted that dream for the butler. He had patience. He just kept doing his job in the prison. He was selfless. When he helped others out, he didn't say, well, what about me? Well, you know, why? He could have complained constantly saying, you know, I'm the one that interpreted that dream. I shouldn't be in this prison anymore. But he remained faithful to God and what God had in mind for him. So now we see he was restored, and not only that, exalted to a place second behind the king. And so Pharaoh assigned him to, with this great problem of the famine and how to work it out so that all would be able to survive. So we read in Genesis 41, Joseph was 30 years old when he stood before Pharaoh, king of Egypt. Joseph went out from the presence of Pharaoh and went throughout all the land of Egypt. And in the 7 plenteous years, the earth brought forth by handfuls. And so he gathered up all the food for the 7 years, which were in the land of Egypt, and laid up the food in the cities, the food of the field, which was round about every city, laid he up the same. Joseph gathered the corn as the sand of the sea very much until he left numbering, for it was without number. So we don't need to really read through all of these, but we see that he had a couple of sons, that the 7 years of plenteousness happened. He stored up the corn, and then the 7 years of the dearth came. But since it was well planned for, Egypt was the place to be. Egypt had the food during that time. So we read in Genesis 41:55, when all the land of Egypt was famished, the people cried to Pharaoh for bread. And Pharaoh said unto all the Egyptians, go unto Joseph, what he saith to you, do. So he was in charge of this great problem and worked out a solution. And as we see what happened, he sold the corn that he had stored up and sold it unto the Egyptians. And so in verse 57 we read, and all countries came into Egypt to Joseph to buy corn, because that the famine was so sore in all lands. So we see that this is what eventually brought Joseph's brethren back. So once again we see the same influences in his life. This famine was a way that he was able to spread the word of God and also to bring his brethren back to him. He had faith that he didn't really know what was going to happen next to him. But at this point now, he could see that his brethren would probably return to him because of the famine. We thought earlier, because he was a firstborn, that he might end up being, you know, having confidence and a leader. And that's what he showed in leading this whole country. And even more than that, all the countries around him through this famine. Leadership, wisdom, confidence, faith. So that is the next major event, is the appearance of his brethren back to him. In chapter 42 we read, now when Jacob saw there was corn in Egypt, Jacob said unto his sons, why do ye look one upon another? Behold, I've heard there is corn in Egypt. Get you down thither and buy us from thence. Buy for us, that we may live and not die. And so Joseph's 10 brethren went down to buy corn in Egypt. And Joseph knew his brethren, but they knew not him. It had been a lot of years that had passed by, and of course he was dressed up quite differently than them, so they never would have thought that this could be Joseph. And they said, thy servants are 12 brethren, the sons of one man in the land of Canaan. Behold, the youngest is this day with our father, and one is not. This is speaking to Joseph and explaining their plight. Hereby ye shall be proved. By the life of Pharaoh ye shall not go forth hence, except your youngest brother come hither. And this is Joseph talking now. So he wanted to see Benjamin. But Jacob did not want to lose him like he lost Joseph, so he kept him there. He kept him at home. And so we read of Joseph dealing with his brethren. It says, if ye be true men, let one of your brethren be bound in the house of the prison. Go ye, carry corn for the famine of your houses. So now he's testing his brethren. And he's wanting them to bring Benjamin to him. It says, bring your youngest brother unto me, so shall your words be verified, and ye shall not die. And they did so. And so what he's really doing is teaching his brethren a lesson there. He could have exacted vengeance upon them. He certainly had the power to do that. He could have had them killed. But what he was doing was trying to make them understand the things they had done wrong. And they're starting to do that. And we read in verse 21, they said one to another, we are verily guilty concerning our brother, in that we saw the anguish of his soul when he besought us, and we would not hear. Therefore is this distress come upon us. And Reuben answered them, saying, spake I not unto you, saying, do not sin against the child, and you would not hear. Therefore, behold, also his blood is required. And they knew not that Joseph understood them, for he spake unto them by an interpreter. So they had no idea that this was indeed their brother. It says in verse 24 that Joseph turned himself about from them and wept and returned to them again and communed with them and took from them Simeon and bound him before their eyes. So he was overcome with emotion seeing his brethren again. This was the first of several times where he had to excuse himself from their presence because he was so emotional. And so we read on that they filled their sacks with food and sent them away. But they put a cup in the sack's mouth of the youngest when Benjamin had come back. And we won't go through all of these details, except for that because that cup was found in his sack, he brought them back again and said, "Wherefore have you rewarded evil for good? Is not this it in which my Lord drinketh, and whereby indeed he divineth? Ye have done evil in so doing." This was in stealing that silver cup. And he overtook them, and he spake unto them these same words. And they said unto him, "Wherefore saith my Lord these words? God forbid that thy servant should do according to this thing. Behold, the money which we found in our sacks' mouths, we brought again unto thee out of the land of Canaan. How then should we steal out of thy Lord's house silver or gold?" So they're trying to defend themselves under this accusation, but of course we know they found that cup in Benjamin's sack. But this was again another test from Joseph to his brethren in helping to develop their characters. And we see that it worked. They rent their clothes and laid at every man his ass and returned to the city. And skipping on to verse 26, it says, "We said we cannot go down if our youngest brother be with us. Then we will go down, for we may not see the man's face except our youngest brother be with us." So this is talking about they were going to be sent back to Jacob without Benjamin. And they knew that they could not bear, especially after coming back without Joseph, they couldn't bear to return to their father without Benjamin. So we read, "Thy servant my father said unto us, Ye know that my wife bare me two sons, and the one went out from me, and I said, Surely he is torn in pieces, and I saw him not since. If you take this also from me, and mischief befall him, ye shall bring down my gray hairs with sorrow to the grave." They knew that their father could not bear to see Benjamin gone. "Now therefore, when I come to thy servant my father, and the lad be not with us, seeing that his life is bound up in the lad's life, and it shall come to pass, when he seeth that the lad is not with us, that he will die, and thy servant shall bring down the gray hairs of thy servant our father with sorrow to the grave. For thy servant became surety for the lad unto my father, saying, If I bring him not unto thee, then I shall bear the blame to my father forever. Now therefore I pray thee," and this is Judah speaking, "let thy servant abide instead of the lad, a bondman to my Lord, and let the lad go up with his brethren." So he's basically saying, "Take me, let Benjamin go, and I'll serve instead of him. I'll take the blame for this great sin." So we see a great development of his brethren in being able to, you know, have a self-sacrificing attitude. "For how shall I go up to my father that the lad be not with me, lest peradventure I see the evil that shall come on my father?" So he's willing to sacrifice himself for his brother and for his father's sake. So the influences we see here really is Joseph on his brethren. They weren't so much on Joseph, but he was manipulating his brethren through all these proceedings of sending them back and forth to get to Benjamin and to talk to Jacob. And we saw that Judah was willing to sacrifice himself for Benjamin. We also see that Jacob had learned to trust God in letting Benjamin to go in the first place, because at first he wouldn't let him go. He didn't trust that God would protect him. But eventually he did. He learned that lesson as well, and that was all because of Joseph. So we see that Joseph showed compassion, wisdom, love, and a good example for his brethren to follow. So the next event is that he reveals himself to his brethren. So at this point, he saw that the transformation of his brethren was complete, that they were remorseful for what had happened. It says, Joseph could not refrain himself before all them that stood by him. And he cried, cause every man to go out from me. So once again, he was so emotional. And so he sent everyone else out, and he made himself known unto his brethren. And so he wept aloud, and the Egyptians in the house of Pharaoh had heard. Must have been quite a scene to see him reveal himself to his brethren. He says, I am Joseph. Doth my father yet live? And his brethren could not answer him, for they were troubled at his presence. Joseph said unto his brethren, come near to me, I pray you. And they came near. And he said, I am Joseph, your brother, whom you sold into Egypt. Now therefore be not grieved, nor angry with yourselves, that you sold me hither. For God did send me before you to preserve life. And God sent me before you to preserve you a posterity in the earth, and to save your lives by a great deliverance. So now it was not you that sent me hither, but God. And he hath made me a father to Pharaoh and all the Lord, and Lord of all his house, and ruler throughout all the land of Egypt. Behold, your eyes see, and the eyes of my brother Benjamin, that it is my mouth that speaketh unto you. And ye shall tell my father of all my glory in Egypt, of all that ye have seen, and ye shall haste and bring down my father hither. And he fell upon his brother Benjamin's neck and wept, and Benjamin wept upon his neck. Moreover, he kissed all his brethren and wept upon them. And after that, his brethren talked with him. So we see the number one influence here is God. He saw the whole plan now before him. He understood that all that had happened in his life was due to God and what his plan was for him. At the time, he had no idea, being all the things that happened. And we've gone through probably a dozen events, and they all kind of led up to this. And he realized at this point that all of it was because of God, and that was his plan for him. So he showed forgiveness. Once again, we said he could have done anything to his brethren. He could have acted out revenge. He could have had them killed. But he showed compassion on them. He showed selflessness. So now we read that they went and got Jacob, and there was a reunion, and they dwelt in the land of Egypt. And they had possessions therein, and grew and multiplied exceedingly. So the family was brought back to Egypt, and they prospered. It says, Jacob lived in the land of Egypt 17 years, so the whole age of Jacob was 147 years. And the time drew nigh that Israel must die, and he called his son Joseph and said unto him, if now I have found grace in thy sight, put, I pray thee, thy hand under my thigh, and deal kindly and truly with me. Bury me not, I pray thee, in Egypt, but I will lie with my fathers, and thou shalt carry me out of Egypt and bury me in their burying place. And he said, I will do as thou hast said. And he said, swear unto me, and he sware unto him, and Israel bowed himself upon the bed's head. And it came to pass after these things that one told Joseph, behold, thy father is sick. And he took him with his two sons, Manasseh and Ephraim. And skipping on down, it says that now the eyes of Israel were dim for age, so that he could not see. And he brought them near unto him. This is Joseph bringing his two sons. And he kissed them and embraced them. And Israel stretched out his right hand and laid it upon Ephraim's head, who was the younger, and his left hand upon Manasseh's head, guiding his hands wittingly, for Manasseh was the firstborn. When Joseph saw that his father laid his right hand upon the head of Ephraim, it displeased him. And he held up his father's hand to remove it from Ephraim's head onto Manasseh's head, because Manasseh was the firstborn, and he's the one that really should have had the blessing. So Joseph said to his father, not so, my father, for this is the firstborn. Put thy right hand upon his head. And his father refused and said, I know it, my son, I know it. He also shall become a people. He also shall be great. But truly his younger brother shall be greater than he, and his seed shall become a multitude of nations. So here we see the faith of Jacob, knowing what God's plan was. explaining it to Joseph. So he was still, even on his deathbed, teaching a lesson to Joseph, further developing him in his faith in God and his plan. So he blessed him that day, saying, "In thee shall Israel bless, saying, God make thee as Ephraim." So here we see, once again, God influencing him, but also Jacob. Jacob was once again reunited and teaching him lessons in understanding what God's plan is. And Joseph realized that. So he showed humility there in understanding that his father was right. And he had faith, not only in God, but in his father. So now, the final event in Joseph's life, we read in chapter 50. "And when Joseph's brethren saw their father was dead, they said, Joseph will peradventure hate us and will certainly requite us all the evil which he did unto him." So his brethren were still a little bit worried because they thought, well, maybe he's just being kind to us for Jacob's sake. But now that Jacob's gone, maybe he will punish us for what we did. But Joseph said, "Fear not, for I am in the place of God. For am I in the place of God? But as for you, ye thought evil against me. But God meant it unto good to bring to pass, as it is this day, to save much people alive. Now therefore fear ye not, I will nourish you and your little ones." And he comforted them and spake kindly to them. So he reassured them that he was not the judge, God is the judge. That he truly did forgive them, had compassion on them, and would continue to help them. And so we read, Joseph dwelt in Egypt, he and his father's house, and Joseph lived 110 years. And Joseph said unto his brethren, "I die, and God will surely visit you and bring you out of this land, and unto the land which he sware to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob." So he knew they would eventually leave that land of Egypt and be brought into the promised land. And he took an oath of the children of Israel, saying, "God will surely visit you, and ye shall carry up my bones from thence." So Joseph died, being 110 years old, and they embalmed him, and he was put in a coffin in Egypt. So even in his death, he was faithful to God. He let God influence him, and he knew, he had faith, that the nation would eventually rise up and go into the promised land. So we see those traits: hope, faith, and love. So we've kind of went through Joseph's life, the major events, and we can see so many types that point forward to Christ. And if we think of Joseph and Christ both, they were both beloved of their father, hated by their brethren, suffered conspiracy to be killed, sold into captivity, ignored by Gentiles, elevated as the savior of his brethren. So what is the message for us? We can look and we can find probably dozens more of these types. Well, we know that Christ was a perfect character, but sometimes we think, well, I can't be as perfect as Jesus. So we have other examples like Joseph. But they point forward to Christ. And so it's encouraging for us to try to follow those traits and see the trials that he had and connect them with the trials that we have. So what we can do with all of this is to apply this list of traits. Self-examination is the key. To look at what traits do we have, good, bad, which ones are our strengths, which ones are our weaknesses, and compare these traits with those of Joseph and of Christ. Understand that the things that Joseph went to, all those trials, not knowing what's meant for us, are the same kinds of trials that we go through. Emulate the good character traits of others and exhibit good character traits for others to emulate. So we see that's what Joseph did in teaching his brethren. And Jacob did in teaching Joseph. But we have to know it's a continuous process. We saw these different influences in Joseph's life, all through his life, things that he never would have expected. Traits are added, traits are removed. It's a continual process. We have to know that we will constantly fail. But the key is to strive to improve so that these failures are out of character. They're not really our main character. And we started this talk with the example of David, how we think of David as a man after God's own heart. Well, we also know that he was guilty of adultery and murder. But those things were out of character. They really weren't who he was. And so that's the kind of thing that we need to do, is to try to make our character so that our sins are just simply things that were kind of out of our main character. I'd like to read in closing from the Ways of Providence by Brother Roberts. It's in dealing on a chapter with Joseph. He says, "No greater evil short of death could befall a human being than that which had thus come to Joseph. A spectator on the spot would have said it was evil, and it was evil in which it was not possible to imagine any good purpose. There was no explanation of it. Joseph was not permitted to know the meaning. He could not have understood it if told. It would have frustrated the object for him to know. Let us recollect this when, in any matter similarly situated, circumstances may be dark, calamity unmixed, the situation such that enemies may appear to speak the truth if they say, there is no help for him in God. Yet God may be at the bottom of all the troubles for purposes of goodness which the future alone will reveal. The only policy is, in all circumstances, to commit ourselves to the keeping of our Creator in faith and well-doing, as the Spirit commands. Commit thy way unto the Lord. Trust also in him, and he shall bring it to pass. And he shall bring forth thy righteousness as the light, and thy judgment as the noonday."